We're reading from the early pages of the Gospel of Mark, the early stages of Jesus' public ministry. And we can see, especially in Mark's Gospel, that Jesus is very active. He takes on an intense level of activity, of ministry. And then in today's first reading from the letter to the Hebrews, we have an explanation of what he was really up to. An interpretation, a theological interpretation of what Jesus was doing in his ministry. Now we can think about this, if we're starting from a purely natural level, as Jesus establishing his reputation, Jesus accomplishing his goals. Let's take a side reflection for a moment. There's a phenomenon that I'm sure you have observed, and that is that sometimes people, when they are successful, they collapse. They reach a certain level of accomplishment, and then they are ruined by it. Just recently, maybe last week or the week before, I read about a professional basketball player. I don't know his name. Never heard of him before, but he played in the NBA, so the highest level of professional basketball. He's 22 years old. Suddenly he resigns. And, people say, you're doing exactly the opposite of what you're supposed to do. When you get to that level, that's what you celebrate, and you continue to reign. And he said, no, his whole life, he decided to make basketball his life, and then when he finally got a life that was all basketball, he discovered he had no life. All he had was basketball, and it was a mental torment for him. And he said, "This is not working for me. I'm getting out of it." That's just one example. You could multiply them. You think of these entertainers, singers, or movie stars. They accomplish something extraordinary. They're very popular. Everybody knows who they are. They can't go anywhere without being recognized, and then they collapse into some kind of a addiction or a mental illness or some kind of problem. And it looks like the success itself, the very thing that they were trying to achieve, is what ruined them. In fact, the psychologists have a lot of study of this. Back in the days of Freud, he studied this. Freud, the father of modern psychology, he wrote a book or a paper on this thing, Wrecked by Success. Wrecked by Success. So it's a phenomenon that we can observe. It doesn't happen to everybody. I mean, we know some people, they're successful and they maintain their balance and they're successful for years and years. But there's so many cases of people who won the championship or won the gold medal or whatever, or got a multi-million dollar contract, and then everything fell apart for them. Now, I mention this because this is a human phenomenon, and there are human explanations for it. I think Freud, part of his idea was that a person is not psychologically allowed to surpass his own parents. So if he does, he feels guilty about it, and then he can no longer function. Well, I don't know if that's really holds much water, but anyway, that was his idea. Now, I mention this because that's a natural phenomenon that we can observe, but it is not what happens to Jesus. And Jesus, of course, is not simply operating on a natural level, and he doesn't do things the way we would tend to project upon him. Now, here he is. He is establishing himself. He's extraordinarily successful. He can heal everybody. He can drive out all the demons. He can certainly do that. There's no end to what he can accomplish, and everybody is looking for him. Some people have, secular thinkers have even said that Jesus himself was ruined by his success, that the reason why he was crucified is because he became so successful that he became a threat to the powers that be, and his own success ruined him. Now, that's not at all what happened, but let's understand what did happen. He did the Father's will. He performed the miracles that the Father wanted him to perform. He made himself known in the town of Capernaum here. And he got to the point where people at least were awakened to the presence of someone from God. Right at the peak, or right at the threshold of his success, of his glorious reign, he disappeared. Rising very early before dawn, he left and went off to a deserted place where he prayed. This introduces into the ministry of Jesus an element that we don't see in the stories of movie stars who collapse, or like that basketball player. He put his whole life into his identity as a basketball player. And once he was at the highest level, he realized he had nothing. A person who prays, and Jesus is the example here, knows that you can't identify your whole self with anything or anybody or any accomplishment, because that's not the truth. We come from God and we are for God. So if we don't have that living connection with God, of course we're going to collapse. In fact, we all do collapse. That's what happens when we sin. You know, we lose or forget our connection with God, our identity in God, our happiness, our fulfillment in God. Now, Jesus doesn't, of course, make that mistake. He does not get caught up in what others think about him or what he can accomplish. He's entirely caught up with the will of the Father. When he prays, he is expressing his identity as the Son of the Father. He's always expressing his identity. That's all he is the Son of the Father. He does everything according to the will of the Father. Okay, so this is, here we see him doing something that was not expected. He goes off by himself to a deserted place as if he didn't want to be popular and successful. Then Simon and the other disciples find him and they tell him, everyone is looking for you. Now that, if you're living for popularity or you're living for a human respect, that is like the gold standard. That's the hook. That's what people are addicted to have everybody looking for them, to have everybody looking at them, to have everybody talking about them. That is not what Jesus is, that's not his motivation. He's not satisfied that everyone's looking for him. He has not come for that. He has come to proclaim the kingdom. And so it's not enough to have everybody in Capernaum looking for him. There's a lot of other places where the message has to be proclaimed, and that's what he does. So he violates that expectation, popular expectation, and does what he's supposed to do. In this sense, he's entirely free of the traps that tend to catch us. We want to be comfortable, we want to be popular, we want to be successful, we want to be powerful, we want to be beautiful. That's not at all what Jesus is thinking about. And so he doesn't get caught in it. Now, as I said, the letter to the Hebrews, which is probably the most theological of the books of the New Testament, explains to us more what's going on behind the scenes here. Why Jesus came at all, why God became man, why he shared in the blood and flesh of the children of man. He didn't become an angel, and he didn't come to help the angels. Because the angels, well, there's a lot of reasons why, but angels do not get caught up in their popularity. And they're not afraid of death, because they don't die. But descendants of Abraham, the children of man, they have these difficulties. And the letter to the Hebrews captures this central one very succinctly. Everybody is subject to slavery to the fear of death. That's our natural condition. Everybody is enslaved to the fear of death. Anybody who no longer fears death is free. That's a free man, a free woman. Jesus came for this precise reason, to destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and to free those who through fear of death had been subject to slavery all their life. Think about this just a little bit. What are we afraid of? We're afraid of loss, afraid of being hurt, we're afraid of dying, afraid of suffering, afraid of rejection. What if we weren't afraid of those things? What if we were set free from that slavery? Then we would really be free. And that's exactly the freedom Jesus has come to establish. So he's not come to build himself up, make himself popular or successful or win any awards. He comes to set us free. And in order to do that, he has to empty himself, sacrifice himself. He takes on the whole condition of those who he's trying to save in order to set us free. And that's what Hebrews is describing. And this will continue as we work our way through the letter to the Hebrews. The work of Jesus as priest, the one who offers sacrifice, the sacrifice that is acceptable, the sacrifice that is actually effective for us, that is the sacrifice of himself. So for us, for now, it's good enough to realize Jesus is not enslaved himself to any of the things that catch us, enslave us, any attachments or fears, and he has the power to set us free. So our fulfillment in life will come from our dedication to him, our entrustment of ourselves to him, not from anything else. We live for him, we live with him, we live by his power at work in us, then we are free, and we're fulfilled, and we're happy, we have hope, we have hope of eternal life.